I was actually hearing a news report in California right before I got on the plane announcing the situation in Manchester. So timing wise, it was quite interesting just in terms of my own trip. And, you know, obviously a huge tragedy if what is going on or said to have gone on there actually happened the way they're saying. It's very suspicious. So many elements of it. I don't know how deeply you've dug into it. Any thoughts on that?
Look, first of all, I'll say the police have, I mean, my experience of the police is they lie. The police press offices regularly lie. I mean, they would justify it sometimes and say, well, we want to wrong foot a criminal so that we have more chance to catch them. So the idea that the London media and the rest of the world's media will just report what the police are saying as fact, which is what the BBC have been doing, particularly the Gordon Carrera, who's the BBC security correspondent. Most of the rest of them will couch these police statements in terms of alleged, this sort of thing. But Gordon doesn't. He just says it's a suicide bomber. So that's the first thing, is that the question has to be, was it a suicide bomber? How did you know so quickly it was a suicide bomber? I mean, we know that it's very feasible to have concealed bombs. This is a nail bomb, which is characteristic of the fascists, not of Islamic terrorists. And if it's a concealed device, the question then comes, who's planted the concealed device in the foyer of the Manchester Arena? And the second thing is, if it was actually on the guy that's done it, who's, I'm sorry, forgotten his name already, but the guy they've said has done it, if it was on him, did he know it was a bomb? You know, so there's all sorts of questions. He's flown in, by the way, just 2 days before the attack. He flew in from Libya, and the Ron Paul Institute and the Daily Mail have all reported that he was very closely connected with the forces who overthrew Gaddafi in Libya. So he's effectively a kind of Al-Qaeda Libya trainee, probably, possibly even trained and known very well by our own security services, by our own SAS and our own MI6.
Right.
So very, very close to those security services. And I noticed just an hour or so ago on the BBC, they were saying that the police say they believe that he was part of a wider network. Well, perhaps that wider network is MI6 and MI5.
Yeah, exactly. Or CIA, you know. So that's the problem that we have.
His name, Salman Abedi was his name. Also, we've heard that people in Manchester have several times have been calling the terrorist hotline saying, this guy is dangerous. This guy is dangerous. Can you please do something about him? And saying that he is actually saying to us that suicide bombing is acceptable under Islam, and this really worries us. So they've reported this guy to MI5, to the police, etc. So they have said, they came up with this very strange comment saying something like, he may have been in our purview or something. I can't remember the exact terms,
yes,
but anyway,
that's right.
They were saying that they thought they might have known about him, but that they were giving it looks to me as if they knew all about him. It looks as if they possibly, first of all, they've been warned by Muslims in Manchester all about this guy, saying, look, you've got to keep a very close eye on him. And then he was then taken over, or he went of his own accord over to Libya and was potentially trained to carry out terrorist attacks, including suicide bombings, by our own sponsored people over in Libya. Because, of course, Britain was very much involved, MI6, back in even in the 1990s, with the Libyan fighting group, was sponsored and paid with British taxpayers' money to train these Islamic fanatics to overthrow Gaddafi. And this guy, Salman Abedi, was part of that group, certainly within the last 5 or 6 years, the same people who overthrew Gaddafi.
Right. Well, I'm just seeing that the Telegraph is actually reporting that he also might have been trained in Syria, they're saying he became so-called radicalized in Syria. Not sure what that really means. That's interesting.
The question is, Kerry, the question is, who trained him? And you might not find it's now British taxpayers' money, special forces that did the training.
Yes. Well, this is, you know, in my view, this is what we call a Manchurian candidate again. And the trouble is that the thing that's perplexing me, I don't know if it's bothering you or what, but is how quickly they identified him as the bomber, the so-called bomber.
They found his identification at the scene. Look, the main thing is, as a suicide bomber, there is no way to tell if it's a suicide bombing or not.
Yeah, but
this is the problem.
The information is that what I heard, we heard, of course, you're going to hear so many different things, and a lot of these things are contradictory. The information we heard is that he had identification on him, which was made it very convenient. There's still no reason to assume, you know, you're talking about a stadium with hundreds of thousands of people or whatever. Why him? You know, in other words, why so quickly can they zero in on this is the guy? And then, of course, he dies very conveniently. So then, this has to happen every single time. They can never interview these people. It seems the press is never going to get to someone like this to actually get them to speak. So this is a huge problem.
Let's say something about the whole thing of suicide bombings, okay? Now, back in the 1980s, there was a big attack over in Iran by a couple of Hezbollah suicide bombers against an American base, which killed something like 80 US soldiers. And it led to the United States pulling out, I think it was actually in Lebanon, pulling out completely of the country. That was a hard target. And that was a suicide bomber that did that. I think possibly two suicide bombers that did that attack. Now, Manchester Arena is not a hard target. A battleship is a hard target. You know, where the kamikaze, Japanese kamikaze planes would crash a battleship full of explosives. That was a suicide bombing. But there is absolutely no need whatever to use a suicide bomber against a soft target like the Manchester Arena. Let's be really clear about this. If I wanted to, I could take my bomb and leave it on the floor in Manchester Arena, walk out and press my button and blow the bomb and the people around it to kingdom come without having to risk my life at all. So people need to be really clear about this. There is absolutely no point and no need to use suicide bombings against these sorts of soft targets. Of course, we've seen this sort of thing in the past. Every time I see one of these suicide bombing targets, I think if it's a soft target, it's very unlikely it really was a suicide bomber. So that's the main thing to say about that. But I did an article years ago about this, about the suicide bombings in the over in Iraq, and when the entire Shia insurgency in Iraq back in 2004 started when the Al-Sadr newspaper was closed down in 2004 by Bremer and the occupation forces. And that happened because they printed a newspaper where they said the suicide bombing last week, I think it was a weekly paper, but anyway, the suicide bombing last week wasn't a suicide bombing. This is something we've been told all around the world. It was a big suicide bomb in Baghdad of some sort. And he said, all the eyewitnesses we've spoken to say it was a helicopter firing a missile. And it wasn't a suicide bombing. And that was on the front page of the newspaper. The next day, Bremer closed the paper down. The day after, the Shia insurgency in Iraq started. So that's how important this whole business of is it really a suicide bomber or isn't it? And on Monday, we had within 8 hours of the attack, the police saying it's a suicide bombing. There's absolutely no way they can possibly know that in so short a time. But also the timing of the attack about 10 days before the general election here really is the killer, I think. And that's why this interview I did on Press TV last night, I think, is cut off halfway through, because I started talking about the Joe Cox murder 10 days before the Brexit referendum vote.
Right.
And suddenly the feed was cut. Yeah. But that's, I think, what we're dealing with here. It could quite easily be that this is, you think about the last, most people who are the floating voters in the general election will make their decision within just a few days of the general election. What's happened with this attack, around about 10 days before the general election, maybe it's a little bit more, I think, is that most of the discussion on TV and radio and in the newspapers about the election, etc., and about who's the best prime minister will be all about security, strong and safe, which is the Conservatives' agenda, strong and stable, is what they've been saying. So this is all about security. Now, up until the weekend, there was a complete train crash for the Conservative Party last Thursday when Theresa May announced various horrendous measures, taking people's houses off them for social care, also to take away people's winter fuel allowances, to make a dent in people's pensions. This is a massive, massive vote loser, and it was a complete train crash over the weekend. On Monday daytime, Theresa May was in Wales to launch another campaign, and it was her attempt to pull back, to reverse, to U-turn some of those disastrous policies that she'd announced last week. And then on Monday evening, bang, there's this big terrorist attack, and suddenly we're talking about something completely different instead. So, I mean, for me, that, I think, is something that people should really focus on, the potential that that this terrorist attack has to focus everyone's attention around the country and the press and the media in the run-up to the general election on terror issues, on security issues, the Securocrat agenda, the MI5 agenda, right, the Islamic terror agenda. And I'm really absolutely gobsmacked police think that they know it was a suicide bombing within literally just a few hours of the attack. I mean, they need to. I've heard, for example, lots of the eyewitnesses saying that they've heard multiple attacks. One saying it sounded like shooting, several attacks. There was even a guy, a homeless guy, on the radio today who was saying that there were definitely two explosions or two bangs, he said.
There was actually supposedly a test going on, a test explosion that happened, if I understood it, a few hours during the day or something, that people need not worry. And then there was, I guess you might have seen the announcement, the video going on in the stadium itself, saying after the bomb had exploded, as they call it, a bomb, that nothing to worry about, be calm, there's nothing happening. Literally, this is what the announcer is saying over the stadium PA system. So there's so many questions. Again, this idea that a suicide bomber or anyone who's planning to plant a bomb, first of all, he didn't go inside the stadium at all. This is what's also interesting. He never made it inside. He was on the outside, and I think it was near the ticket sale, a box office, as I understand it. And now they're publishing.
Okay. Let me just clarify that. It was in the lobby of the Manchester Arena, and it was the explosion actually took place that killed the people actually very close to the merchandise department.
Right.
So, and what we're being told is that Abadi tried to go into the stadium, was told that he couldn't. Now, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about crisis actors as well.
Yes.
I think we've got to be very careful here, because it looks to me as if people have lost loved ones. If you start talking about, oh, it's crisis actors, this is actually, you're starting to impinge on the grief of real people, and also maybe to sort of belittle what's happened. I think it seems pretty clear to me there definitely is, I don't know about the 22 casualties, but certainly some serious injuries, casualties, deaths at the Manchester Arena. I think we're dealing with a terrorist attack, and that could be a way of trying to steer criticism and researchers away into the long grass. But the main problem, I think, is that we don't necessarily understand the ways that attacks can be, like this, can be used to steer elections. I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, he wrote a book back in the 1980s called Terrorism, How the West Can Win. Actually, he didn't write the whole book. He was the editor of it. But it's a whole look at how terrorism can be used to affect the politics of various countries and how it should be tackled by the West. But of course, there's a lot of code in there about how, what effectively I think this has happened is the security services are now using terrorism against the ordinary populations here in the West, and mainly actually against the media and against the politicians. So the sort of go-betweens between the public and the future, so that I think is the aim of these sorts of attacks, is to try and hijack the agenda back to the anti-Muslim, the foreign policy agenda, the kind of thing the Bilderbergers are pushing at a much higher level. So the other thing is really important to understand that the Islamic community in Manchester have made it really clear today. For years, we've been telling the police about this guy. They've done nothing about it, and now look what's happened. So what's got to happen in the future is MI5 have got to come down to the mosques. They've got to talk to the people in the mosques and say, hi, here we are. We're going to have a dialogue with you people because we know that you are the people who can actually prevent attacks like this in the future. And if MI5 don't do that, then they should all be sacked. They should all be thrown on the dole. And we have to hire a whole bunch of new security people who know how to actually protect our cities.
Well, I appreciate the sentiment of what you're saying. However, I have to say that in my view, this is an engineered, you know, we're talking about CIA. We're talking about possibly, as you say, MI5, MI6. In other words, talking to the mosques.
Behind Abadi, the networks behind him are security services.
The guy, you know, he's...
We have to make sure that those security services are protecting us and not encouraging people like Abadi, you know, behind the scenes.
Right.
They need to be open to a bit more scrutiny, you know, and we need to have a dialogue between ordinary people and the security service. They can't hide behind this whole thing of national security forever, Kerry.
I understand, but the problem is that we haven't orchestrated. I mean, I've interviewed Ole Domegaard, who's written books about this subject matter in depth. And, you know, after almost every terror attack we've been having lately. And I can say this has got all the earmarks. Again, this individual supposedly in one thing he's said to have a bank card, and another thing, and they're so they actually show an ID. I think it was on The Guardian, a picture of the ID. In other words, these individuals who are supposed to be committing dastardly acts, carrying their very convenient identification with them to the scene. This just tells you right away that there's something amiss, because there's no logic to taking your identification with you, to wanting to be identified, unless you really do want to be identified. And that just doesn't make sense. It's a dead guy. Now, if there is some kind of payback in which somebody is paid and the family gets a certain amount of money because he goes down and dies for a cause, whether or not this is part of the motivation is something people could talk about. The trouble is that there are too many questions about even how the crowd reacted during this situation. And I think we've just grazing the surface at this time. It's very early days, so to speak, after the attack. But already questions.
It was a sort of attack we're thinking about, where the security services were actually facilitating, behind the scenes facilitating this, then there would almost certainly be people at the Manchester Arena who knew what was going to happen. So we're talking about possibly security guards, these kinds of people that knew something.
Possibly.
But at the end of the day, we don't know yet. It's just impossible to, when we can speculate a bit, but at the end of the day, I think we need to just look at the main connection, which is between the guy that's committed this atrocity, he has been reported by the local people in Manchester to the security services as a danger, as a real threat, because he's saying that he thinks suicide bombing is a good thing to do, and yet our security services have done absolutely nothing. So they are facilitating, effectively, a terror campaign here in Britain, which, what does it do? Well, it ends up funneling more money into the MI5 and the security services. They say, oh, we're going to need more money so we can put more people under surveillance. This is the police state starting to roll in Britain. And unless we do something about MI5 right now and trace and arrest those people who have failed to do what they should have done with this guy once he was reported by the local community, this is just sort of thing is just going to continue. So I would just suggest that is where we need to finish, by simply ending this secrecy by MI5. They've got to go and talk to the Islamic community, and they've got to make a very close, they've got to be serious about individuals when the imams in the mosque say, look, you've got to stop this guy. They've just got to stop them right there. And, that's where they need to intervene, you know, if necessary, jail somebody, you know, whatever. Yeah. If it means taking somebody who's got that sort of intent off the street.
I'm just noticing that the UK Mirror back in the 24th of March said, had an article, Britain after Brussels, question mark, ISIS supporters vote UK top target as terrorists warn of attack. So we've actually had two attacks in Britain. I don't know what the date of the other one was, but...
Back in March. So, but you see, this is, I think, more scaremongering. I mean, a lot of what the newspapers print is just nonsense from MI5. They say things like, oh, we've foiled 15 terror plots this year. Well, no, you haven't, because they haven't been to court. So you're just making up these figures. You know, so if you foil a terror plot, you've got to take somebody to court and you've got to charge them. They're just making these things up. And the main scandal in all this, Kerry, is there's no interrogation of these statements by the police and security services at all by the London media. They just treat what they're saying. They've got these kind of wide eyes. They're like rabbits in the headlights. They just do not ask questions, very, very basic, obvious questions. Right. Like, for example, when ISIS supposedly claimed this attack, they got details completely wrong about what had even happened. So quite clearly, we're being lied to on a massive scale.
Yes.
And the other day in Manchester, a load of innocent people were killed. We've got to stop this, and we've got to take it really seriously. And the way to do it is to deal with the security service, mainly MI5.
Okay. Well,
but anyway,
yeah.
I'm gonna have to go.
I understand. It's great to have you here, Tony. Really appreciate you taking the time. And I hope that once Bilderberg does get off, you know, get going, that you're going to be able to report back to us. Are you planning attending? I'm assuming this.
No, I'm going to be reporting on it. Right. I'll be reporting on it this Friday and next Friday.
Okay.
At thisweek.org.uk. And on, if anyone's in Bristol, they can tune in on 93.2 FM between 5 and 7.
All right. So there you have it. Thank you very much, Tony. Take care of yourself, and we'll have you back on the show. All right.
Thanks, Kerry. Thanks a lot.
All right. Okay. Goodbye. Thank you. So everyone, thanks very much for watching. I am here in the UK to conduct a tour of ancient sites with Maria Wheatley. So we're going to be doing that. We have a special night with, let's see, it's going to be at the Stonehenge, and that will be partway through the tour. All the information is on my website at projectcamelotportal.com, and we are actually selling day tickets. So those are for a lower price. It's easier if you drive yourself. Obviously, we don't have to pay for the coach. We have very limited space. It's a very small kind of exclusive tour, whatever you want to call it. And so that's one thing I'm doing here. And then I have the Awaken Aware UK conference happening, and I have a huge list of speakers. All the information can be gotten, again, at my website. And if you go to the events tab on my website, you can click over to either one of those events, find out how to get tickets, etc., and it's all there. So that is happening on the 24th and 25th of June. So that's what's going on. I am here in Europe at the moment. If something should come along in Europe, someone wants to see me speak somewhere else in Europe, it's much easier, obviously, to get over somewhere from here, here in England. And I am able to stay for free here in my partner's house. And so this is what makes this possible. So anyone who is interested, I will be doing some more, obviously, live shows while I'm here, and so stay tuned for the announcements in that regard. Thanks for watching, and have a great day, night, wherever you are on the planet. And more of this needs to be investigated, obviously, with regard to the latest terrorist incident, and we'll see if we can get in touch with Ole. See if he's been covering this, and see if we can get more information. All right. Thank you for watching, and take care. Bye-bye.